your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from Startuperator.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies. Today, I bring you another startup here from lovely Germany, officially headquartered in Tübingen, and Philip is my guest. Hey, Philip, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Pleasure to have me to be on the show.
Yeah, it's totally a pleasure to have you here. We already talked before. You tried to unfix the bicycle behind you so it will fall on your head during the interview and we have a nice takeout, right? That was the agreement?
Exactly. Yeah, I loosened the screws so everything is set up to be like 6 to 7 minutes will fall right in my neck and then we have a very nice outtake.
In order not to miss the outtakes or anything else, make sure to hit the like and subscribe button wherever you're watching this or listening to this. If we are referring to something like Philip's LinkedIn profile, the universities, or the startup, go down here in the show notes. There's always a link to our blog post where you can learn more. That said, I was a little bit surprised when I went to your CV because officially you guys are a med tech startup. But then I realized, you're not a medical doctor. You are a computer scientist, neuroscience, PhD. But first, let us talk a little bit about what you did, because I've seen you studied computer science at Technical University Darmstadt, a university from which we already had a lot of alumni here in our interviews. Can you take us a little bit like through your life, what you've done so far and how it led you to found I2U?
Very happy to. So before I started my studies in Darmstadt, I did an apprenticeship as a chemical lab assistant. After that, I decided, okay, I want to do some more tech stuff. So I went to Darmstadt University, which is one of the best universities for computer science. They have a very large variety of topics, and I was always interested in how do robots do? How does vision work? How do you visualize things? And that's why I decided, okay, Darmstadt is the perfect place for me. So I went to Darmstadt and did my diploma back then there with focus on robotics, computer vision, and 3D graphics. And my diploma thesis then was about developing a camera system for robots that helps detecting things based on how you use them and not what they are. So instead of saying this is a cup, this is a jug, this is a plate, the camera system was detecting, okay, this is something I can grasp at a handle, this is something I need to grasp on the side, and saying this is more more natural way because you don't need to categorize the objects, it's more about how to use them.
That sounds pretty trivial at the beginning, but I'm very sure it gave you a lot of headaches when you tried to teach that to computer.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very exciting topic, and we've been working on an international team with people from Birmingham and from Italy, and it was a very, very nice project, and it was a lot of fun back then. But then I decided, okay, I spent weeks and weeks on fiddling around in minor details in camera systems for robots, and said, okay, but we have very, very good camera systems, natural camera systems. So I want to understand how do they work? So how does vision work? How is it possible that I'm standing here, I can see you, you're sitting there, you can see me, you can see my background, the bike, you know I'm in the front, the bike is in the back. All this kind of processing goes in your head. So how does this work? So I was looking around, okay, where is a good place to do this? And then I found Professor Bethke in Tübingen at the Max Planck Institute for Biological Cybernetics. And he had a junior research group there back then and was doing very, very exciting research in computational neuroscience and said, this is exactly what I wanted to do. So I wrote him an email and explained what I did before and what I wanted to do now and was asking him for a PhD position. And luckily, he just had a PhD position open for somebody with my track record. So I started talking to him, and and then we decided, okay, sounds like a good match. So I went to Tübingen and started my academic career then in Tübingen.
We may add, for everybody who's not a very frequent follower of this podcast or not familiar with Germany, the Max Planck Society is like an association of very research-heavy institutions, and it's named after the German researcher Max Planck, who discovered, I think he laid the groundwork for quantum theory. Was that right? Something like this. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not a physicist. I'm sorry. That's just my rude understanding. If you do have anything else to add, make sure to teach us down here in the comments. Basically, that, as we said, it's a research heavy institution. So what was your research there?
So my research there was on how nerve cells in the brain process the information. So when you get when an animal, a human, is getting information, you have the retina in your eye. This takes the light and then transfers it into electrical signals that goes through your nerves. And then the signals go from the eyes through to the back of the head and start processing there, and then go into different levels and in your brain.
May I add a very simplified version? Basically, you were working how to decode the human graphics card.
A little bit, yeah. So it was, okay, how do these cells in the brain work? How do they process information? What kind of optimization do they use? So understanding how these little cells work. And this is all the basis that's going on with all the artificial intelligence systems we have now. So all these like deep learning topics where you have like deep fake is a very prominent topic now, where you have all these methods in with neural networks that can generate images, that can make fake images, and can generate texts and everything. So all this is some part of what I was doing in my PhD, which I did in Tübingen for about 5 years. First at the Max Planck Institute, and then my professor went from the Max Planck Institute to the University Hospital in Tübingen. And then the second part of my PhD I did at the university and the university hospital in Tübingen.
We may also add that the University of Tübingen is one of the premier research universities in Germany. We just talked before, and for example, DNA was discovered there, the basics of DNA, and some famous alumni like Jürgen Stark, the former chief economist of the European Central Bank, graduated from there, as well as a lot of very famous people in theology, psychology, geography, and so on and so forth. So they have like hundreds of famous alumni in certain fields. So you've been there, you studied how the brain processes visual information, and this led you in what way to start an app that cares about the eye? How did this twist, this turn actually happen?
Actually, there is one step in between which we're currently missing. So after I finished my PhD, I started working for a German consulting company, IT and strategy consulting for different blue chip companies in Germany. And I worked there for about 5 years. So like did it in automotive industry, in insurance industry, did like project management for them, all these agile transformation and everything. And after about 5 years, I said, okay, this is all nice. I learned a lot. It was a great experience. But I wanted to go back to where I came from, to tech, to be closer to research. And then I was like, I just quit my job and was then about, okay, what I want to do something more meaningful with my time. And so I was like checking around with like friends, what they're currently doing, where they're working. And then I was talking to a friend of mine, Christian, who is a professor at Korea University in Seoul. and was asking him, so here, don't you have anything like a project where you could use somebody who has experience in like all these artificial intelligence, machine learning topics? And he said, yeah, I have a PhD student here. He's working in developmental aid in his free time. And he's doing a project in Ethiopia where they record images of the retina because this PhD student is an optometrician, so he knows how to record the retinas. And so yeah, they are really good at recording retinas. They have equipment, but they have very little ophthalmologists who can then take these images of the retina and then say, okay, this is a healthy retina. This is has some kind of disease. So this could be something where we apply machine learning to help the people there to make this faster and more easily. And I said, okay, this sounds like a good idea. So I just like booked the next flight to Seoul and then went to Korea to Seoul and started working on this research project there, which was about 2.5 years ago. And at first we said, okay, let's try something out for the branch of developmental aid. Let's see if we can develop an algorithm that's like very small and easy to use so we can give it to small hospitals in Ethiopia so they can use it there. And then we thought, okay, this kind of works. And we had played around with like, how can we do this on smartphones, for example, because there's devices that are, they are available everywhere. And found, okay, this is actually a very nice idea. And then we started talking to people back in Germany. And they said, yeah, actually, this is a really nice idea. So this could be a really useful tool, not even in Africa, but also in other countries, like in Germany, all over Europe. And say, okay, then let's see if we can, this idea that we like came up with in over a couple of years in a research project, can we turn this into a company? So I started talking to Philip Behrens, who's a professor at the eye hospital in Tübingen, and said, yeah, this is our idea, and we want to like turn this into a startup company. Do you want to join us? Is this a nice idea where you can work together? And he said, yeah, actually, the University Hospital in Tübingen is very interested in continuing working on this kind of research and forming into a company. So we applied for startup funding in Germany. And they were also really excited about the idea. And that's why we got then startup funding in the beginning of 2020.
That is an interesting idea. Basically, you went from Darmstadt to Tübingen to Korea just to get back to Tübingen. That is quite an interesting journey. When you've been talking about like recognizing diseases in your eye, that's basically what we're talking about. I had two thoughts. First, could you like also integrate this in a smart mirror? For example, you look in the mirror every morning and just by the snap of a finger, basically every morning, your smart mirror checks your eyes. Is that possible? And secondly, is it also possible to diagnose other diseases, not of the eye, when you're scanning the eye, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of what you guys are actually doing?
This would actually be a really great application to have this in a smart mirror. The problem is to see the retina, so the back of the eye. You have to go through the pupil and then see the back of the eye. And for this, you need some kind of lenses, so you need some kind of optics. So the very simple one is something like this here. So this is a mobile fundoscope where you can put in a camera in the back and have then the smartphone and then record the retina with this. So it's not possible to like have a mirror and then just have a camera chip there, which sees through this very tiny black spot in my eye. So you need some kind of optic to put in front of the eye and record with the retina. That's why this, this mirror idea is actually great and might work for diseases of the outer part of the eye, but not for diseases of the retina. And for the other part, actually, yes, the retina is very interesting because it's part of the central nervous system. So you can see also fine blood vessels and everything without having to penetrate the body. So you can see the very fine structure of the vessels, of the blood vessels. And this gives you a lot of information about other diseases too, for example, hypertension. So there is a lot of potential in using images of the retina for diagnosing different kind of diseases. So I think later we can go a bit more in detail on that.
Mm-hmm. And now talking about your company. We already realized you are using smartphones to scan the eye. And you've shown for everybody who's not watching this as a YouTube interview, but listening to it as an audio podcast, you showed something you had to put on the camera of the smartphone, which more or less looks like a little handgun. And with this, you can scan the eye. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you guys actually doing, what setup you need, and where your app is currently in use, and how you guys are working with this and with this data?
Yeah, sure. First part, funny that you say it looks for you like little handgun. I think that's your Texan background speaking there. Because most people I talk to, they say it looks a little bit like a hairdryer, like a big hairdryer. It is a small device, a handheld device, the size of the hairdryer. And this is more or less, simply speaking, just a couple of lenses that focus the light from the eye and that goes into the eye to get the images back. And what we are currently doing is we're in an early stage, so we're currently in the development stage together with the eye hospital in Tübingen, where we developed the smartphone app that helps recording the images, because you need to go through the pupil as it's a very small part. So you need some kind of assistance to use this device to record the retina properly. And then once you have a properly recorded retina, this image then gets analyzed by different kind of algorithms to see, okay, is there this kind of disease or that kind of disease. And the application we are going for is not that every customer just uses this device for themselves, but we want to empower general physicians and caretakers with this kind of device. Because we believe artificial intelligence, especially in the medical field, is something that still needs a last decision made from medical experts. So having this method saying, okay, you have this and this disease, just without medical supervision, I think can be kind of dangerous for misinterpretation. So that's why our belief is we should use this as a smart tool to make doctors more powerful than they currently are, make examinations more easily accessible. Currently, if you want to get this kind of retina examination, you have to go to an ophthalmologist's office, which there are, at least in Germany, we have 80 million or a lot more than 80 million people here, and only 8,000 ophthalmologists in Germany. So to get to an ophthalmologist, you usually have to drive a long distance, then you have to wait in the waiting room, and the cost is a lot higher for the health insurances because experts are more expensive. And if you see, okay, how many people are at risk for retinal diseases, which are people over a certain age, which are diabetic people, or as I said before, people with high blood pressure. So this is a large part of the German population and worldwide population. Diabetes is a very dangerous disease all over the world. So there are a lot of people who might benefit from these like regular and easy checkups. And we believe if this checkup can be done by your family doctor or by a caretaker in a nursing home, then this is a lot more accessible and you can find retinal diseases a lot easier and a lot faster. And this is why our approach is we want to empower these people with the software we develop for the smartphone, so they can use their smartphone or their office smartphone together with these mobile fundus cameras, which are regular medical devices you can buy off the shelf, and then do these kind of examinations to see, okay, is there some indication of a disease? And if yes, then they should go to the expert for the treatment. So we don't want to replace ophthalmologists and experts. We just want to add an additional layer of checks between doing nothing and going to the expert, because there is a lot of necessity in between. And that's why we think this is a very good idea, which is useful in highly technological countries like in Germany or in Korea or all over Europe, but also in other countries where you don't have medical infrastructure like in developing countries in Africa.
Let me try to poke a little bit on your software. How good is your software? And how do I see the results? Is this basically like a traffic light, green, everything's fine. Orange, you may develop something. And red, you should see an ophthalmologist. Or is it something a little bit more dedicated? And how high is your confidence in this software tool? Meaning, does it like always get the retina diseases?
So the quality of these AR algorithms to detect, for example, diabetic retinopathy, this is like the one of the first diseases that we are currently working on. There, the algorithms are even on an expert ophthalmologist level or even better. So you're in the 98-99% of correct detection, which is more or less the same as expert doctors can recognize these diseases. But we are actually going for this kind of traffic light approach to say, okay, for caretakers and family doctors, it's not important to see, okay, this is a stage 3 or stage 4 retinopathy. For them, it's important, okay, this is a clinical case. So this kind of person needs treatment for the retinopathy. So this is then like a red case, or okay, there seems to be some first indication on retinopathy. Maybe check with the general health of that person. So if there might be a good reason for a checkup, or green, say, okay, everything is fine. So this is the recommendations that our software gives, but still has in the back all the information that if the doctor needs some more information, then he or she can get a full report on everything. But the first indication should be, okay, this is nothing, or there might be some case, or this is a very secure case, so this person needs immediate treatment.
I see. And second question would be, how does it proceed? As you said, okay, let's assume I get this eye scanned. There is like a red light, and what happens then? There is a caretaker, and he says, you should go see an eye doctor, an ophthalmologist. Or do you actually enable the people to go there with the data, ophthalmologist to access the data? Do you work together with, for example, a hospital who gets, if approved, all the pictures? How do you guys work then?
So currently, we're still in the developing phase, so this is not yet fully implemented. But our current plan is that the recordings you do take, they go into the patient management system of the doctor's office that you're at. So, for example, you're at your family doctor. They take the image, and then they get a full report, just like for an EKG, and store this in your patient file. And then when they say, okay, there seems to be a case, you should go to see an ophthalmologist, they can do the report and then send it either digitally or just do a printout and hand it to you, which you can then bring to the ophthalmologist. But then the ophthalmologist would do a full examination anyway, because ophthalmologists have a more high quality equipment. They have very big, expensive stationary cameras, which cost several hundred thousand euros, and then do with this kind of special cameras the examination. Because devices like these here, they are cost a few hundred to up to like 1 or 2,000 euros. So the quality of these is totally sufficient and very good for doing quick checkups. But if you want to have this exact distinguishing between, okay, this is a stage 3 versus stage 4, or maybe there's some other minor details, for this you need these big 100,000 euros cameras, and this is what the ophthalmologists in their office have. They do the recordings with this, and then they can very finely decide, okay, what kind of treatment do you need.
I do believe even the ophthalmologists like it, because it only brings like people to their attention that actually have a suspicion to be really sick, their retina really sick, and you already get an indication where to look. I do believe that, and that's a big plus, especially if you also get a report and then you can crank up your expensive equipment. That is pretty awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your company. How many guys are you right now, and how are you financed?
So currently, we're a team of five plus working student. And we were founded last year in the beginning of 2020. Then because of the pandemic, not everything was working as planned. So our growth was a little bit blocked by this. And now we are we finally closed our pre-seed finance round. So we're currently pre-seed financed with from the here from Bank in Germany. And we have now the founder team are the three founders, Björn, Christian, and me, all with a more technical background. And then we have other members with a more medical business background in our team. And yeah, this is the current state. And we are still looking for more people, and especially for the regulatory part here in Germany, to get our software certified as a medical product according to the European medical device regulation, and some more assistance in different fields. So for people interested in working with us, can check our websites. There we have some information on open position now.
Mm-hmm. I see. And everybody who'd like to learn more can go down here in the show notes. We do have a lot of Wikipedia articles on retinopathy, ophthalmologists, and so on and so forth. Of course, we also have your personal LinkedIn profile, and people will realize I always call you Philip, but you're Jörn Philip. But we agreed just to call you Philip, and that's totally fine. And the people will also find your LinkedIn profile down here. Only thing left for me to say is thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as a guest. And best of luck for the continued development of your tool. Do you have like any timeline in mind when you will be registered as an official medical device, medical software?
So our plan is to get the certification done by the end of 2022. So about the end of next year. And so this is the current plan to have it done ready and started working in 2023 with the first doctors, most likely in southwestern German part, so starting locally and then expanding to Germany, Europe, and then maybe in 3 or 4 years also internationally.
Well, best of luck, and hope to have an update with you guys as soon as we have as soon as you're expanding internationally. Thank you, Philip.
Thanks, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is StartupRad.io, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to StartupRad.io podcast, or check for the StartupRad.io internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the StartupRad.io skill as well.